Well, hello there. Welcome to the Steaming Streaming Podcast. Tonight, we're going to interview one of our long-term Steamers player, a former captain, former club captain, and he's going to tell us about his days in playing with the Steamers, along with myself, with Mick Rains. You are listening to The House here. We'd like to welcome Jim Lyle back. Hello, Jim.
G'day, House. G'day, Nick.
G'day, Jim. How you going? Now, thanks. Listen, let's. We're about to fire, but before we do, we're just going to clear something up. We've just watched you play pool against your lovely wife, Jane. How did you go?
It was a very close battle.
So we'll translate that. Everyone out in there in podcast world knows Jane just kicked Jim's ass in a game of pool, and it was witnessed.
That's why I'm still happily married, and you're
you
not.
You didn't throw it. You tried to win.
We're bringing out the marriage standards in this podcast.
That's pretty brutal.
Well, you've come out firing too. All right.
We'll call that a draw. What brought you to the Steamers? When did you come to the Steamers?
Brought me to the Steamers. I played rugby, sunk my teeth into rugby at university in Newcastle, where I was doing a Bachelor of Education.
When was that? What year was that?
Started in 99 and finished in 2003.
Yep.
Did the maths on that. Didn't fail a subject.
No hex. Well, you were playing hex, so you concentrated.
Yeah, had to get it. Quick smart. So played rugby and went to uni on the side. And, as a teacher with the department, you take a job when one comes your way, and that was down here at Corolla.
So if my son was taught by you and he didn't do too well, do I get my money back for sending him into your class?
Public education, mate.
Jeepers.
You're teaching at Corolla. Now, how did you find your way to playing rugby for the Steamers?
Here? I was working up at Newcastle with a guy who had played with the Steamers, and he was working at Oakland Central School.
Who's that?
That was Big Dog, we called him, Mick McKinley.
Yeah.
So he would have been with the Steamers maybe early 2000s.
Yeah.
Maybe even late 90s.
And he told you to look them up?
He told me, I worked with him up there. I said, look, just got to transfer down to Albury. And he gave me a few names involved the Steamers, and he was a rugby player. Well, yeah, he played rugby there, so he knew I played rugby. So I said, look up the Albury Steamers.
All right, so what year was that? What year did you turn up?
And I thought, well, Steamers would be one of the clubs down there.
That's optimistic.
I'll go to see what the other clubs are like first.
And how'd you go? Where were the other clubs?
Did you sing
Not
yourself?
Not as good as the Steamers. That's
did you sing yourself playing for the Waratahs or Walker City?
No, he wasn't going to travel that far.
No, but I'm just saying.
If he had been
far. I'm of a firm belief, clubs can be quite tribal and you can have a bit of anger between opposing players, but no matter which club you land in, I think they're all pretty
they're
similar.
All the same. You got a cohort of 90% of good blokes the rest
it's
of people like
80-20
rules, House and stuff like that. So you've come in, what year was that when you first turned up?
2007.
And what was your take on the club? You've rocked up to training at early in the year.
Was that Waits Park?
Heat was the biggest one. I reckon I rocked up to Waits Park. I was invited down by Mick Alexander to come and train because I wasn't too sure whether I was going to play or not.
Mick McKinley reached out to Mick Alexander, did he?
Must have, I think.
There's a lot of Mick Alexander connections to people playing rugby for the Steamers. You'll hear.
Yeah. Yep. And I didn't think I was going to play when I moved down because I still was at that time Newcastle was still home, so I was thinking about travelling up there every now and then and playing a couple of more games with the Seahorses.
So you were that well respected up there that they would look for you to go back up there, or
absolutely.
That makes sense.
Just cracking first grade up there when I come down here. So
just quickly, someone said that you were like Powderfinger's manager. band Powderfinger? He said you're like the band manager? No?
No.
Okay. No. This is from question from one of our listeners, that's all.
You're thinking of the Newcastle band. Silver Chair.
I thought Powderfinger's from there as well.
No, Silver Chair.
Oh, yeah.
But Jim managing a bunch of 12-year-olds does make sense. So who was your coach? Who was your captain? Who were the players that were around the club when you first turned up?
Start of that 2007 was a bit, and I probably didn't read too much into the history of what happened 2006 and a whole changeover. I remember turning up the training. I remember Gibbo going out of his way to introduce himself, and he'd kind of taken me under his wing, like those first couple of training sessions.
Yeah.
Made sure I found my feet in the club. But I think...
Is Gibbo like one of those school kids that makes friends with all the new kids because they can't make friends with locals?
Maybe. I think they said something the same about Shane Warne, didn't they?
Yeah.
He made me feel welcome. And yeah. I think Don Cameron was the first coach. But I think there was a few things going on in the pre-season with who was going to be coach, and I think they couldn't find anyone. So I think maybe at the last minute, Don Cameron might have threw up his hand.
So walk us through. So you played from 2007 through to 2012?
Yeah, a few years. I trained, I guess the best way. I trained from 2007 to 2012 and would have probably played a half a dozen other games from 2013, 2014. But yeah, really.
And how'd you find that? When were you, you were named first grade captain. When did that happen?
Captain a couple, Mick Alexander got injured 2008, end of 2008.
Yeah.
So I think I captained a few there, and then he'd retired, and really were kind of looking around to see who would be captain.
There'd be a few candidates. Like, it's something to be proud of. Do you hang your hat on that?
Yeah, I do. I hang my hat on.
Did you take it? You took it seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. And I never really took rugby seriously before. It turned me into a good trainer. To kind of, I'm definitely someone who says if you're going to talk the talk, you've got to walk the walk.
Yeah.
So that definitely changed the way I trained. But yeah, and that and life, are you always look for taking, well, just work, sorry, not life, but you always look to take those steps up. When they come up, you take those opportunities of extra responsibility, and that was just...
So do you reckon Don did that deliberately? And why I ask is I remember when Don pushed Nathan Bright to become captain in 2012, it was he felt strongly that would... give Bridie a lot more drive. Even though he's already driven, it would just give him that extra bit as a captain. So he's sort of done it twice. If he's done it with you, and then he's done it with Nathan Bright.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Don knew my name when he made me captain.
I don't think Don knew many names. I think he got Richard and Benny Walker mixed up quite often.
We'll give Don the right of reply on his...
I think we're at a stage where the club had a lot of young... We were a very young team back then in, say, 2009. And I was probably at that age of just responsibility. Like, I was a...
teacher.
Would have been 28, 29.
Yeah,
you probably knew I could take on that responsibility. I'm not a Nathan Bright captain at all.
You don't go to the other side of the world and back?
I do, but you probably chose me more on the way I'd communicate with the referees. And
the way you play the game itself. Like, Bright's about inspiration. You're more about demonstration. Is that what you're saying?
Not sure what you're saying there. Maybe had a look around and you just thought I was the best option at the time.
We just got a random text from one of our listeners, Jim, and they just want to know, where else did you lay your hat?
Where else did I lay my hat?
I think this comes from
a
female. You said you laid the hat way you're there, and you know, when you talk about playing, it's... Talk about laying your hat down.
No.
Picking up with
the... We'll flag that. Me and House have both just had fucking brain farts. We'll figure out how to
delete. Say, because you were talking about laying, you know, the Hat Foundation.
Yeah, but you sort of got to add... Well. We're going to delete this bit. You sort of got to add... Join the dots a bit. We're as bad as each other.
We're 10 minutes in. Just start again.
You want to start again?
Yeah, just...
I can't keep redoing this. We can delete that. Right, so we've just deleted out a minute of conversation, which made no sense from me and House.
Sorry, guy.
So you've captained your... how did you enjoy that period, 2009 to 2011, 12?
Enjoyed the challenge. I found towards the end of it, I was just become too serious for me.
Like, the rugby
and the role, the responsibility of a captain. And like Gibbo said earlier, you're not just, I wasn't just captain. I was register of the club.
Yeah.
I'll be helping, you know, Gibbo set up grounds. You're organising, you know, everything else which goes on in the club.
That's interesting you say that. That's the level of seriousness that the Steam has entered into was something that I felt Don and Bridie and guys like that felt they had to go to, a place they had to go to.
And back then as a 27, 28, 29 year old, it was, and pre-kids, rugby was priority number one in my life. Work, otherwise, you know, by Thursday night, it was just get through Friday at work, and then I was just thinking about the rugby, the game afterwards, and then everything else that happened, and before you knew it, you had to get through another 5 days of work.
So when was your first final as a first grade? Did you lead a first grade captain? Were you led into finals?
Yep. We made finals. Pretty sure we made finals 2009, 2010, 2011.
2009 was the start of the run. I'm just going to intervene there.
We would have just clawed in the finals.
We are under instructions not to eat, but Jane did put out a bowl of extra eggs, and man, House cannot help ourselves. So that was the run into the finals, where we just wanted to get a bit more each time.
Just clawing in. I think we would have started just clawing into the finals at that stage.
Now you played. Was that? Have you played in grand finals before?
Yeah.
In Newcastle.
Played one of my first season up at Tenterfield in Stanthorpe. Played there. We lost that. Played in one at for Newcastle Uni. Lost that. And then played one with the Steamers and lost that.
Well, that was 2012, and that was effectively your last year.
Yep.
Yeah. And just as a sideline, you did score an enormous amount of fantasy points in one movement in that game, I think. Was that right?
No, that wasn't the grand final.
No, that was in Albury.
It was Wagga City. It was one of my first games back, because that 2012 was pretty disrupted
with
year.
Hit. Yeah.
So I think that was one of my first games back. So that was.
And what did you do in that little movement? Just walk us through it, because you have talked about it.
I can't remember. See, remind me of it.
Was that the same year Troy scored his first try ever?
No, that was 2014, I think.
No, 12 he scored it.
I think it was a kick. It wasn't a chip. It was a bit more than a chip kick. It was a driving kick down the sideline. Maybe I was on about halfway.
Chip and chase, a pick up, a gather.
Kicked it over, and the fullback... Maybe the fullback I tackled the fullback, pilfered the ball off the fullback, and the try line was just there.
So 36 fantasy points in one movement. One of the greatest little plays we'd seen.
Just going to take you back to Newcastle a little bit.
Mm.
Was there any sort of young potential stars that you came across that ended up going through into Super Rugby when you were playing that now in the Wallabies or maybe?
No one's Super Rugby, but I do remember playing when I was just cracking first grade there in 2006, and I do remember looking around, and I was the only player who hadn't played for New South Wales Country or the Newcastle Wildfires, who played in the Shoot Shield.
So that was like almost like a Joe Maddock in the Crusaders, the only one that never
played. Yeah, I was really the only.
Didn't you once tackle Australia's best halfback?
Got in a dust up with Steve Merrick, I wasn't a big rugby watcher.
I had no idea who he was.
And I walked off the field and I said, Who's this little cranky prick halfback for Singleton? Like, they all kind of chuckled at me and says, that's Steve Merrick. So, geez, he can hit pretty hard.
He walked away from a rugby career.
Yep, walked away from a rugby career, I think 6 months before I turned professional.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. So, that was the end of your career, was 2012, roughly?
Yep.
How did you find 2013 when they've watching first grade win a grand final? How was that for you?
It was all right. Actually, I was part of that premiership team because I played two games for them.
Did you?
That year, yeah.
The two opening rounds.
I think I drove the bus. First grade.
Yeah, drove the bus to Tamora for us.
Oh, all right.
I think I played a half up there, drove the bus up, and then played a half.
Did you get an invite to the reunion for the?
No.
Oh, that's a bit harsh.
No. But I knew my body wasn't up to scratch, and even the quality of players who were in that 2013 team, it was.
Well, they there's a few of those didn't start till the fifth or sixth game as well.
A few of those quality players didn't come till round two, or when all the hard travelling was over and. Yeah. All the big games were done, and then we were just sitting on the side of the border for the rest of the round.
Well, he must have been short early. Well, that game at Tamora must have been on then, because he must have been short if I had he's still on the bench.
So they're watching the grand final, the first grand final you've seen, you've been around where they've won, where their team's won?
Yep. Did I go? I'm pretty sure I went up and watched that game.
Well, Gibbo went up and he thought he was the curse, and that broke. No, he wasn't there. Gibbo was saying that he went over to West Australia, so he missed it.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not sure. I remember that.
He was going for his truck license so he could drive the mines.
Mines, yeah.
And that's why he was driving the bus for a few weeks.
Speaking of Gibbo, now, we do have a... I know you've been going through your notes. We do have a drop goal controversy. Where Gibbo swears
there's
that
nothing controversial about it.
Well, you've talked to Gibbo. It is. He took one or two drop goals in his career. Firstly, how many drop goal attempts do you reckon he made in the time you saw him play? Remembering that he took you under his wing, so you can't throw him under the bus.
I don't remember him missing too many.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no. I think his soccer background. He used to strike him pretty well. Not sure. Yeah, I remember him talking about the one at Leeton, and
So the one at Leeton was the one where...
And that was fine, where we had a penalty about 40 out.
Game was over.
We were winning by 50, but we thought, we'll just kick to the corner and get another try. It would have been maybe 2 minutes left or something like that.
Yeah.
And before I'd even got a chance to get the ball off, or to tell Gibbo what the captain wanted to do. He'd already tapped it on his foot and he'd taken a couple of steps and it knocked her over from about 40 out.
So the other field goal, walk us through the other one.
The more stressful.
The stressful one. So how did that pan out?
This was my your captain mindset.
Yeah. What year was this?
Maybe 2010.
So you're starting, you've been made finals, you're starting to get more serious about your goals.
Yep, we're playing at Aggies up at Wagga. I'm not sure the structure, it must have been a top five or something. At some stage there, I think it was a top eight. So
The top half go in, the bottom half don't go in.
I remember, so just as my responsible self who didn't enjoy rugby too much at that stage, analysing everything which had to happen, and I've worked out with a winning bonus point here would be set
for the finals. Winning bonus point gets you into the finals. Yep.
And things weren't looking good. Things were tight. I can't remember. We must have been maybe just ahead.
Up by one or something like that. Up by
one or something, and they were on the attack and with time running out. And I think Sam Allen or someone took or Luke Bertram took an intercept and ran about 90 metres.
Sounds like a Sam Allen job.
Dropped it down right next to the post, and I'm thinking, right, I just got to...
So we're up by six, say. We need to be up by more than seven.
Yep.
To get the bonus point, to go into the finals, seal the season.
Yeah. A couple of minutes left, and I thought, sweet.
And we'll what just, happens from there? Who's your goal kicker?
We'll just draw this out.
Yeah, you take a minute.
And the game will be over.
Yeah, great.
I think maybe Stephen Bright or someone else. And how was he as a goal kicker? He would have struck it at about 85%.
So he's a cracking goal kicker. You've got a cracking goal kicker lineup.
Yep.
What happened?
Well, before I'd even got a chance to, that Bright, Stephen Bright. Now, Gibbo's the first on the scene. He's just grabbed the ball. And he's jogged back about 10 minutes, and he's looked at me and he said, stick this bonus point up your backside, and knocked her over. Sweet.
Did he realise it was for a bonus point?
He would have no idea.
And where was your heart from the time he picked it up to the time it went over?
I thought he was just being a good teammate. Gibbo is a great teammate. I thought he's just... Rain got the ball.
Get it back.
Get it back to Steve. Just put it on the 15-yard line so Steve can organize.
Maybe a bit of a chit chat.
Kicking tee. Yeah, yeah. Yep. Few wise words. And just turned on a dime. Didn't even look at. I don't even think he looked at the posts.
And
just
went over. Scribbled
around and knocked it over.
Was there any repercussions?
No. And that's how we played.
Yeah.
And it was.
I think Gibbo did say he got dropped.
Well, you reckon he got dropped after the Leeton game?
Oh, right, okay, did he?
After the Leeton game,
he got dropped. Was a similar sort of drop goal, but not for as much meat and veg.
Yeah, maybe not. And that his one at Leeton was 40 metres out, close to the sideline. This one was, 15 metres out, just next to the upright. So he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
He just knows how to... Stir me up a bit.
So, what sort of involvement have you had with the Steamers since 2013? That sort of
year. Dropped off a little bit.
The Foxtel Sevens.
Well, involved as in involved
in playing
in a playing role. And socially. Yep. Yeah, did that touch footy. I played a couple of years. For the second grade team, when they needed
bits and here and there,
some players, you always go to a game, probably my involvement in the club dropped off a bit, and that happens. I've got family, young kids now.
Do you see a place for people like yourself down the track? So not necessarily next year or 2 years, but if your kids reach a certain age, do you see? Is that something where you'd like to?
Once upon a time, I thought about coaching, but I just don't have the... To do that, you've got to have the time and you've got to have the energy.
Yeah.
And that's not for me. If rugby coaching becomes my priority in the next 5 years, then I've done something wrong at work.
You never know. You could be a dark horse.
Maybe. And look, What I realised when I played there and was a senior player and helped out a lot in the community is you need your volunteers. So these clubs don't run themselves. And there are a lot of people working behind the scenes to get these 15 blokes out onto the field. That's for sure.
Yeah. So you're with some of that, your social activities through your career, what sort of things strike out? Like I remember one. Where you wandered into the Mangapla Hotel. Yeah. Can you exactly what I'm talking about? Like, you just want to walk us through how you got to that position? Like, were you captain at that point?
Yeah, it would have been. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I was playing. Yep. And that was towards the end of
my career.
I was an experienced responsible player.
Teacher.
Adult. Yeah.
Parent. All those. Husband.
It was a couple though, eh?
Wagga McDonald's was the same night.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, let's walk through the
no, entry. Walking through.
That's when we did the Olympics, see?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Well, hold on. We can't leave our listeners hanging. So, what was the Olympics?
It was a bus thing.
Bus trip.
To Tamora?
Bus trip to Tamora. Well, it must have been the Olympics, must have been on.
So what year was. Oh,
2012.
Yeah.
2012 Olympics were on, so we all had to dress up as a.
What did you get dressed up as?
I dressed up as I wore a snorkel and Speedos. So I don't know what I dressed up as.
And you had flippers on. Remember you were walking in with
and flippers, yeah. A diver.
What happened in McDonald's?
Olympic scuba diver.
So this is on the way back, not on the way there.
On the way back, we stopped at Wagga McDonald's.
On the way
and
back.
And how was Jim involved in walking
there?
Because the boys were hungry, and then so we stopped in at Wagga McDonald's. Kirby Senior was driving.
Kirby and
John Kirby.
Yeah. Kirby Junior had he bought night vision goggles.
Oh right,
glasses.
Okay.
I've never worn these before. I'm gonna have to try these out. So and obviously we know what happens with steamers bus trips. An hour into a bus trip, you know what the clothing
is. This a McDonald's or is this at Mangapai Hotel?
No, this is a McDonald's.
Oh really? The light would have been pretty bright.
That's what I put them on, and I've hopped off the bus, and I've been hit by these bloody car park lights, and I couldn't see anything in there. I was trying to. There's a big hedge there, and I've just walked straight through a hedge.
Just to be clear, this is on the way home from the game, not on the way to the game.
Well, the local coppers showed up, didn't they?
Well, they said, get back in that bus before we call the police.
And so you did, because...
Did, and we said...
You're a one warning kind of guy.
Yeah. So I thought onwards and upwards to Mangapai.
And
off we went.
Same
thing.
Everyone?
A bit more...
A bit less would have been... A bit less clothing, I would have thought.
Well, I only had flippers on. I think I took the flippers off. By the time I got the Mangapai, I took the flippers off.
Still had the night vision
goggles on. Yep, and the publican there at Mangapai. What was her name?
Treen. Dave.
She gave me a nice welcome.
She would have loved it. I think there's a
photo. It was cold that night. It was particularly cold that night, but as she pointed out to me.
The thing about Treen at Mangapai Hotel is that... She turned off all the lights so she could serve
so
us,
she could serve us with the night vision goggles.
So she turned off all the lights in the pub so she can serve us with the night
vision. I think there are a couple of photos of a long line of naked butts at Mangapai Hotel. You'd be part of that.
I hope so. I hope it's my butt.
Yeah, I think it's a lot of butts.
Side,
yeah. What other social memories do you have of the club? Ones that are publishable.
The bus trips were always good. The bus trips were always a highlight, and even just the North Side, when we got sponsored by the North Side.
Yeah.
It was always good. They had that top room up there, so
could just go.
It was always good, even on home games, just to go up there and just let your head down.
Yeah.
I said, I took a bit of stress on. In that role, so just to get up there and let your hair down with your mates. And they were my mates, you know. My social circle was 50-year-old maths teachers who lived in Corowa or rugby players. So that was my that
How
was my
many
social
of
circle.
Your friends now would you say have come from your rugby, time in rugby?
Here?
Oh, in Newcastle and here? Like.
Oh, 90%
of them. Yeah. 90%. And they just, some of them you might not see for a few years.
Yeah, and you don't have to see them.
Yeah.
That's the beauty about rugby. You don't have to see them for years, but when you do catch up.
I'm just going to ask you a quick question there, Jimmy. Where do you hope to see the Steamers go from here into the next 5 years? Do you reckon you would see rugby in Albury or Donga in the next 5 years?
Where do you hope and where do you think?
I hope that they're able to get a lot stronger. I hope some talent hits just can land on the border because when I was playing, that was kind of and I know there is an active recruitment drive going
now,
on.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And when I'd first started, there was nothing on that. And this was touched on in prior podcasts that we relied heavily on CSU students who went to CSU. Myself, who just blew in for work, or you know, Kiwis, Frenchmen who came over here for work, and without any active recruitment. So it was luck of the draw. And the last one, which I know for that, would have been like Richie Mannion.
Yeah,
he dropped in off just like we didn't actively recruit him. He was just here for work. So, but I think now with CSU gone, those courses are gone now. So
they're playing rugby league with the Mud Dogs.
Yep. So I think there's a time for that. Have to do that active recruitment. So hopefully, the thing is, you've got to recruit a good player, and there's a fine balance. Like Kerry Robb, we recruited him. So we got him over from New Zealand.
When was this? When?
Well, this was probably 2000. 2010. So that's when, and that was Don started taking an active role in trying to recruit
Don Cameron
trying to recruit.
So did Kerry Robb only rock up, because we talked about this earlier on, that he only ended up playing like half a dozen games for this club.
Yep.
And how did you rate?
That was our issue. There's that small window of talent or ability you get here. He was too high. Like he lasted 10 games with us maybe, and then word got out. Maybe he had a bit of a tape or something going on.
And stuff anyway,
And he got signed up by a semi-professional league in Russia.
And that was that.
Bloody Mark Mates. You listening, Mark Mates? You did that.
And that was it. So, there's the thing. That you need to recruit someone who's good enough, who's a good player, but they're not too good. They'll go somewhere else. Want someone who's going to live.
They want to want you. We did have a long sprout of recruits who found partners here and sort of settled down.
What did they do after that?
Some of them, they still get a few years out of them, but the fact that they've lived here and stuff.
It's always going to be the
sort of, you get what you're given with a lot of that.
Yeah.
We've had recruits that turned up for 4 days. We had one that didn't, I think it was before 2011, that didn't get on the plane. They paid for a ticket and didn't get on the plane.
Yeah, yep.
The South African guy.
Our English guy that came over, they stayed with you for 4 days. On the fucking Monday, and I'm gone by Thursday.
I remember we had a Kiwi bloke, Harry, I think his name was. He turned up with a sore tooth, just a sore tooth, and he went to training, and he dropped every ball he tried to catch. And couldn't run out of sight on a dark night. And I think he played second grade. So we put him in second grade just to see how he go. Give him a nice start in second grade. And I think he dislocated his shoulder or hurt his shoulder. So it's in a sling on the Tuesdays, not training. So I remember Bridie and myself going over to his house and giving him his dismissal papers. Basically saying, look, Harry, sorry, mate, this isn't working out.
And where does that end up? Like, you're just not going to, we're not going to help him with accommodation anymore.
We're not going to pay. I think we're pretty generous. I think we paid, here's your F. It's not working out, mate. We can't find your work. We won't be looking to find your work. We won't be paying your rent.
Yeah.
Past this date, here's a ticket. We'll pay for your plane ticket to go back home.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming. Thanks for giving
me the crap. I remember the Pommy guy that lasted 4 days, and he asked for a return flight, and I said, no, that wouldn't be happening. You can sort that out yourself. Words similar to that effect.
Yeah. So that's going to be a big challenge
for the movie. Moving
forward, but hey, you've got to be proactive.
Yeah.
And it's good to see that they're being proactive. It'll be great if there was some natural...
Yeah.
They could foster some homegrown talent, which I think they're working on with the juniors.
They've got the Colts coming through, that'll be great to watch.
I think that's a good move.
I think 100%.
Yep, just so long as they get looked after. you know, I'm thinking something when you've got boys playing against men, you know, you just got to be very careful that sometimes.
Well, I think
yesterday's heroes. That's 100%.
There's one team in particular I'm thinking of, but
yeah.
if Siru can step up and help protect the kids, and I think third grade has a slightly different set of rules, for playing rules, like 1 meter push on scrums and stuff like that. So,
yep,
you know that. I don't really.
What
know,
is cult under 19s?
Under 20s.
Under 21s. Yeah, well, they're adults anyway.
Yeah.
We're all playing grade.
I think it's not what you're
as a teenager.
What you're trying to protect is not the 20-year-olds and 19-year-olds that have played 2 or 3 years of rugby. You're trying to protect the 7 or 8-year-olds that are saying,
"Yeah, I want to have
a crack."
Yeah.
So you don't want them to turn up and just get pumped.
Yeah.
So maybe a couple of old heads like you two running around beside them would help them.
Yep.
No way.
I booked in my physio appointment. I've got my next physio appointment next week. So yeah, I'm
all the injections in the world. So is there anything, as we start to wind down here, Jim, is there anything you'd like to talk about? Like you were, Jane was saying that you were taking notes and stuff during the week, knowing that you're going to be a topic.
No, I wasn't taking notes during the week. No regrets at all. I wouldn't matter if I turned up and played for the Stains or Wagga City, whoever. No regrets in playing rugby, and even though I'm a bit battered up, bit battered now, with a bit of a limp, and I'd often ask when I first did it, I thought, would I change it? Would I have stopped playing rugby for 3 or 4 years earlier if I meant not having this now? I said, no.
You're not going to, 100%.
No regrets there.
Is there any points where you like, I've played quite a bit where all my mates have dropped off, you know, and I carried on playing, but then I've come back and played, and now I've dropped off the radar. Is you like any of those where you like taking a little?
Did you miss it? Did you were you going watching games?
I missed it 2013 when they were successful.
Yeah,
I missed it big time. Yeah. I was very envious. I was even actually 2012. I played 2 games in 2012 and busted the hip. And
you played in the grand final that year too.
Yep. So had about 3 or 4 weeks off. And thinking I was done. Missed it, turned up watching, I missed it incredibly, and I said, I can't, too itchy, I said, I've got to try and, have a crack at coming back, which I did, for better or worse, I'm not sure, but got the experience, the grand final, but at the end of the day, rugby was never about winning for me. Yeah. I know you've talked to a cup, players, and you talk about the premierships and how good the feeling was of winning a premiership. Well, it was never about
that. Sounds like someone who's never won a premiership.
It does. But for me, it was always about, you know, there's 15 mates in the change rooms before a game. You can look at each other in the eye and know that you'll do everything you can.
It's quite a solemn experience, like, which a lot of people don't understand. I think it's for men and women's rugby, that time in the shed you share, the time, you know, when you're training and it's -2 degrees and someone says, listen, just give us an extra 10 minutes on this, you know, like.
And I knew it was coming to end because I'd start wondering how long was left in the game. And as soon as you start wondering, how long is there left in the game, hope it's over soon.
Yeah.
The enjoyment of the game, of playing the game, really.
And then training gets a little bit frustrated because you go, it's raining, it's cold, you think to yourself, why am I here?
Yeah, I could be.
I'm over this sort of stuff. Yeah.
And I'd lost a couple of yards of pace probably, so not being going from one of the fastest ones to
having
trouble.
I've just remembered something. I've always said Ruben Sarkis reminds me of something in the way he runs. It's Jim Lolbeck.
Yeah.
Which is quite a compliment. But
is he fast, is he?
He's very fast, but they both had the same stride.
Deceptively so. I remember someone giving me, I think I must have nearly, I think we were up at Chairman, maybe I was playing a second grader up at Tudor, and I was running maybe 80 metre. maybe 80 metre try or something. And
no,
someone
40
was,
metres, but 80. Yep,
someone
yep,
was
yep.
saying, lift your legs, lift your knees, lift your knees. I was like, I am. There I am thinking I'm running as fast. Maybe I was watching the video back when Don used to film the games. And maybe I was thinking, lift your legs, lift your legs.
Yeah, so we're going to break it. We're sort of coming to a bit of a close here now. And obviously, I'm just going to hang you this $100 note here. Because we want to know who your best top three players.
Not even the best three players from Christchurch.
This interview's over. We want to know who your toss.
Did you hear top... that, Dave? Not even the three best players.
Well, it's better than the guy you're going to name anyway. Because I ran over that guy that many times in Christchurch. It was a fun one.
I'm not naming toss.
Nah, but we want to know your top three Steamers players.
Would toss, would he get an honourable mention?
He was, for the short time he was here, when I saw him play, I thought, wow, yeah, this bloke
is something.
This
else.
Bloke is another league to us. He was our strongest, he was our biggest, he was our strongest defender.
Yeah.
Our fastest ball runner.
And best
passer.
So, but over your time with the Steamers, you know, playing and probably, I don't know, playing, we'll go for your playing days. Yep. What is your top best three?
I'm only going to comment on, blokes I played with.
That's all we sort of go.
Yep. So probably the third.
So 1 point.
Yep, 1 point. Mick Alexander.
Oh, okay.
He was.
He was coming towards the end of his career.
Game winner. Hard as nails. Knew how to play the game.
So he's a hard player.
Yep.
I haven't heard anyone say that yet.
Absolutely, he was. Running the ball up and defensively. Yeah. Yep. But he was, and when I moved, moving down from Newcastle, where you get a lot of intelligence, yeah. I guess. And coming down here, he was one he just identified straight away. He knew the game.
He knew the game.
And he knew the people around him. He knew what he was capable of, and he knew what the people around him were capable of.
Yeah.
All right. Number two.
Nathan Bright.
As a player. So noodle arms as a player.
Yep. Not as the toughest, biggest hitter, fastest player, but as a person who can have the biggest effect on a team in 80 minutes.
I remember seeing Brighty in just the random games where the scores are sort of muddling along, and then out of the blue he'd do a hit-up and just sort of...
Yep.
You felt like he was internally screaming to everyone around him to man up.
Yeah,
It was a weird thing to watch, which it was inspiring.
And so, talking to and talking to him lately, it baffled me that he took up rugby later in life too. Yeah, when he said he played a lot of basketball, just his brain, just his rugby brain too.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yep.
You talked about
how strong he was at the back of a scrum.
Yeah.
Those got us out of. Sometimes their scrums would just go backwards, and he'd just stick his hand in the second row, pull it out, wheel around, beat a couple of players, pass it to his fullback, and off he went.
Because you talk about Nathan Bright, and people back home would see him as like Steve Surridge, a wiry guy for number eight for Canterbury and the Crusaders and for the All Blacks. But Nathan, this guy get run over by anyone. He just came out of the back of the scrums. And ran through people.
Would not know what the inside of a gym looked like.
Yeah.
Honestly, he would never have been in one.
Does he get a right of reply?
I don't know. And we've all seen his posture once he's got a couple of beers. And that was exactly the same when he played.
So before we get to your number one, Jane, can you just tell us the feeling of winning that game of pool? Was that the...
This is going to give the kids an egg.
No, there's no Easter eggs left. Actually, Jay's now handing out ice creams before we get to our number one.
She beats me in pool all the time, Nick, all right?
That's it. Say that publicly.
All right.
Number one. Let's get to it.
And this time I'm going back to just class and toughness and Dick Mendon.
Yeah.
He changed the way... He he brought rugby for the Steamers into a new decade.
Totally.
Of, when for 4 years when I playing, it was training on a Thursday night. Was we had six set moves, and we would just spend an hour just rolling through every set move. And occasionally, and by maybe the end of the season, we got the idea in the inside centres and the outside centres. Hey, even though we call this one, we might fake and we might hit you. But it would take a lot of the season to get that drilled in. Yeah. And we would train one phase.
Yeah.
We'd do one phase training and offset kind of a set piece and see him come in, and the game plan just changed to we'll play what Richard Menyon sees in front of him.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah. It was a bit of a perfect storm having Richie turn up and then Dave Stewart turned up with that sort of motion game plan.
Yep.
And on top of that you've got Bridie and Don with that passion to push forward, so it all sort of clicked into place. But so Richie's the guy?
I think so. As one player and what I've seen him do to the club, yep.
Yeah, totally.
And for a small bloke, geez, he was tough.
Yeah.
I remember his first training session, we knew nothing about him and he didn't say anything. He was just very understated. Yeah. He said, oh, play a bit of rugby. I'm new to the area, I'm just interested in playing a bit. And Don and me being one of the only senior ones there early on in the pre-season, because it would have been early Feb or something, he said, oh, Jim,
I've just got to say, this would be one of the very only times that Richie ever turned up early in the pre-season.
Well, it was his first week,
yeah.
That's why. And so he's turned up and Don said, oh, I like what I see about this bloke. You partner up with him in all the drills and all the tackle, wrestle drills, and you just let me know what you think. End of the training session, and he absolutely belted me from pillar to post for about 90 minutes.
That's the country.
I limped over the Don at the end of the training session. I thought, I think you'll be all right to pick in first grade. He's a standout. A
generational player.
Yep.
I think the Steamers have had a few like that.
So just going to go back, number three, Mick Alexander.
Mick Alexander, again, just the way he played the game, and it was class.
Yeah.
Bridie, for just his motivation.
Bravery.
Leadership, yep. And he, as I said, and he did it on, he didn't do it in the gym. He wasn't a big bloke, but he would fend off as many.
So he didn't carry around a V8. He was more like a Cortina.
Well,
he was taking a Cortina to a demolition derby.
No, look, he would still fend off blokes and
you talk about Jimmons and Nathan Brighty. Menyon would be the same, but Menyon works outside on a farm all day. You know, Menyon probably wouldn't see the inside of a gym either.
What does Brighty do? Work on spreadsheets?
Does he?
He goes hard at those spreadsheets.
You know, I can remember one preseason when old Menyon laughed at Honeyman with all the sudden. He bought the training.
Oh, that was another reason I'm glad I gave up in 2013 when Honeyman came on pre-season coordinator. And I actually lived the house that Jane and I first bought, backed onto the bowl at Monument.
Oh, the bowl at Monument.
And, we would hear Honeyman screaming at him, we'd see the Steamers.
So when we say Honeyman, we're talking about Nathan Honeyman. He came in as a very motivated trainer. And one of the things he started early was running weights and tyres and all sorts of stuff up Monument.
Yep.
And the start of that run is at the back of Jim and Jane's house.
And I used to go out there and water the garden. Yeah. Thank Christ, I'm not playing in 2013.
It
would not have lasted.
Well, we're just going to take this last opportunity to thank Jim for his time.
Thank you, House. Thanks for the opportunity.
How are you enjoying these other podcasts? You've been listening to us quite a bit.
Right, I think it's fantastic. It's fantastic what you guys are doing.
So for anyone out there, make sure you click on follow, share the podcasts, get the word out there. Send us suggestions on who we should interview next. We're thinking of getting down to a training session. We might try and do the coach soon if we can get our timing sorted. Anyone you want to catch up with, House, in particular? Who would you want to talk to?
I'd probably talk to Emma Clements. Right. And get a version from the woman's side of the club, you know. She's been around for a while now. Someone from the woman's side, you know, yep. telling us,
juniors
telling
our listeners well, out maybe there. The
and the juniors, Tomo. Yeah. We just want
to... Adamson, sorry.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
After spending 400,000 kilometres in a car with him, travelling to and fro from Corowa, he's had plenty of good stories.
Was Brian giving you lots of advice on the... So Brian used to drive to work in Corowa as well.
But that's for another episode.
No, was he giving you lots of advice, post-game advice, on the trips to back to school on the Monday?
No. No, and look, if there was any advice Brian would give, it would have been criticism. So
on a Saturday night.
As in, or on the Monday. So you definitely wouldn't have ever asked him, how do you think I went on the weekend?
On a losing game.
Or even a win. Oh, okay. Andy kind of made that mistake one day. He ran up to Brian and said, how do you think I went? And
Brian told him.
Would often on the Monday would... talk about the game and what happened and what's good about what we're doing well and what we're not doing well. And but he had plenty of great stories.
We've got a few to get out of Brian.
All right, so we'll just take this last opportunity to say thank you to Jane Lowellback for cooking us dinner tonight.
Yep.
And if you're ever in Albury and you're looking for somewhere to go out for an evening dinner and drink, pop down to Brady's, proud sponsors of the Steamers. Go down there, show your loyalty card, and have a great time. And this is goodbye from a house and Mick Rains.